From North State Public Radio, I'm Eric Adams with your headlines for Wednesday, January 14th. The deadly anti-government protests in Iran are being met with threats of military action by President Donald Trump. NSPR's Andre Bayek spoke with Najmuddin Yousefi, an associate professor of Middle Eastern and Islamic history at Chico State. They start by unpacking Trump's message to protesters this week that, quote, help is on the way.
First of all, it's unclear what U.S. intervention amounts to. We don't know if it's going to be some surgical military strike, if it's going to be targeting security forces, intelligence forces, military targets. We don't know what that's going to be. So that's number one. Number two, U.S. intervention can in so many ways undermine the protests by showing a foreign support for protesters who otherwise have very legitimate grievances. And then U.S. intervention can make the protesters the target of even greater reprisal and becoming targets of huge massacres. And then it could also escalate to a regional war by Iran attacking Israel and Israel responding, or Israel joining the U.S. in attacking Iran, which would put Iran in a position to respond accordingly. And then, not least, is the threat of a civil war in Iran, something like Syria. And that would be quite appalling, and that would be opening a Pandora's box.
Why does unrest in Iran matter to the U.S.?
The unrest in Iran matters to the United States for a variety of reasons, but I would say the most important factors, essentially U.S. alliance with Israel, which is important. Iran has been posing a threat to Israel. This past summer, 2025, there was a 12-day war between Iran and Israel. So that was a huge thing, and it's no secret that Israel exerts a lot of influence on the foreign diplomacy of the United States. The other factors include Iran's nuclear project, including the uranium enrichment project, and also its missile project. So all of these are important, but also important is Iran being a huge oil producer. Iran has the fourth largest reserve of natural oil and the second largest in natural gas. And that has been not completely removed from the global market. Iran's still selling oil to China especially, but it's been affected by U.S. sanctions. All these factors, oil, gas, the nuclear project, Israel, they all play a role in this.
What's driving the protests in Iran right now?
The protests are caused by a combination of economic hardship as a result of decades-long U.S. sanctions, endemic corruption, mismanagement, and incompetence. They started some 2 weeks ago as a reaction to the national currency's substantial loss of value, which aggravated an already high inflation rate of over 45%, which has made the purchase of essential items unbearable or very difficult for the ordinary people. And all of these are compounded by systematic oppression, lack of political participation by most people, and numerous constraints imposed on political participation, free and fair elections, thus leaving state street protests and even use of violence the only viable options, unfortunately.
Is this one of the most significant threats to Iran's form of government in recent history?
If you mean the post-1979 government, yes, it is. The only thing that came slightly close to it was, you know, the 2009 protests over the rigged elections of that year. But this poses a huge threat to the government, and it could be the beginning of an end. It's really hard to tell, given what we know at this time, with meager information getting from Iran. Starlink providing access to the internet to Iran, which apparently started today. We are going to learn a little bit more in the coming days.
That was Chico State History Professor Najmuddin Yousefi speaking with NSPR's Andre Bayek about the developing situation in Iran. Human rights groups estimate thousands of protesters there have been killed by state security forces so far. A memorial service for the late Congressman Doug LaMalfa will be held at the Silver Dollar Fairgrounds in Chico on Saturday, January 24th. Tickets are required for entry and can be accessed by filling out a registration form online. Once registered, attendees will receive their ticket by email. Parking opens at 9:30 in the morning, and the service starts at noon. People are being encouraged to arrive early, and instead of bringing flowers, to consider donating to the Oroville Rescue Mission. The number of people getting the flu in California is rising. About 12% of flu tests are coming back positive in the state. In Butte County, right now the percentage is about half that, but probably not for long. Public Health Officer Jarrett Bowden says the number is average, but he expects it to rise soon.
So even though we're kind of sitting at where we normally do on a normal year, we're really worried that that's going to just keep increasing.
Bowden says getting a flu shot is the best way to prevent you from getting the illness. He says this year's shot is less effective because of a new variant, but it can still be up to 40% effective. The Public Health Department is hosting free flu vaccine clinics in the coming weeks in Chico, Oroville, and Gridley. More at mynspr.org. Butte County has seen a spate of high-profile domestic violence cases, some leading to murder or murder-suicide. Butte County District Attorney Mike Ramsey says this crime represents a significant portion of his office's caseload. Statistics he provided to NSPR show 10 years ago, agencies referred a little more than 160 felony cases for possible prosecution. Last year, they referred about 630, a 280% increase, and he says there are likely more cases that go unreported. Ramsey says that's because victims are often caught up in a cycle of abuse.
You have that violence that occurs, and then kind of the cycle rolls into what we call the honeymoon period, in which the abuser usually says, it was only because I was drunk, because I lost my temper, I'll get help. And then we have what we call the tension building part of that cycle, more and more tension, then boom, the explosion of violence.
He says Catalyst in Butte County has a 24/7 crisis hotline and can provide counseling, legal advocacy, education, and safe housing. A UC Irvine study found groups of lightning ignition fires were behind some of California's most destructive wildfire years. Cap Radio's Manola Sakaita has more.
The report found that having many ignitions in close proximity, which can happen when lightning starts fires, can boost their spread. Rebecca Shulton is a UC Irvine postdoctoral researcher studying wildfires. She says improving California's ability to forecast lightning events could help when managing them.
I think a big part is actually better forecasting, because if we know where and when it happens, then it's also going to be easier to deploy your resources.
Shulton says lightning ignition fires can also be difficult to manage because they often happen in remote areas. That can mean fewer resources are readily available to respond to them. She says better forecasting would help teams be better prepared in more remote circumstances and also be more informed. In Sacramento, I'm Manola Sakaita.
And Butte County has a new temporary public works director. The Board of Supervisors unanimously voted to appoint Wendy Tyler to the position this week. She'll be in the role while they search for a permanent replacement following the departure of Joshua Pack late last year. Tyler retired as the Chief Administrative Officer of Colusa County last September. As the interim public works director, she'll oversee road and bridge maintenance, land development, and solid waste management. She starts the job Wednesday. And those were your headlines for Wednesday, January 14th. Our theme song is Burrow, and courtesy of Blue Dot Sessions. For more local and state news, visit our website at mynspr.org. For NSPR News, I'm Eric Adams.